Good morning. This is CIS 1.5, Introduction to Programming Using C++. It's a section that's reserved for students who are interested in the sciences and the engineering and mathematics. We learn the same material that they learn in all the sections of 1.5, but the types of examples that I will use and give you homework assignments are, I think, more interesting. They're more scientific-oriented or engineering-oriented. And generally, in a small class such as this, the students are better students because you already have an interest in science and engineering, and I'll encourage you to get involved and discuss and speak up. I'd like to begin by first going over the syllabus and some of the requirements, and then we'll begin right away with the material. So, the class starts at 9 o'clock promptly, and I don't mind if you bring coffee or breakfast or whatever. You need to stay awake, but please come on time. It's very distracting when people walk in late and then begin to ask questions, and you'll be lost, and other people will get annoyed, and so on. My name is Professor Langsam. I'm the Deputy Chairman of the Department. My office is right over there, so you'll have no problem finding it. There's my phone number, which I never use, so don't bother. The best way to reach me is email, guaranteed, and also, generally, IM. Okay, I'm logged on all the time, 24 hours a day, in fact. So don't get annoyed if I don't answer you, because I may not be sitting in front of the computer. But please feel free at any time to try to talk to me that way. If we need to go over homework assignments or help or just about anything in your major, feel free to contact me versus AOLIM. This is the website. Okay, it's my homepage. And on this front page, which I encourage you to go to, there's a link to the page for this class. And all the handouts that I'm going to be giving you and the assignments that I'm going to be giving you are also posted there, so that if you lose your homework assignment sheet, you don't have to wait, you know, a week or whatever to find it, you can just download it from there. Similarly, if you want to bring in your laptops and use them in class and try out some of the programs that we're going to be talking about, you're encouraged to use your laptops here if you have them. There are plenty of outlets. If you need an extension cord, I'll be glad to give you an extension cord. And all the handouts, I'm going to give you a stack of handouts throughout the semester, are also posted so that you can download them if you wish ahead of time, put them onto your laptops, or even just on your computer at home if you have one, and then try out and see, you know, whether it works and try making changes to it, which is the best way of learning. Now, my office hours have just changed, so let me make this change. Let's just go back here for a moment. It's going to be on Thursdays at the same time. What is going on? At the same time. So Mondays and Thursdays, 12:15 to 2 o'clock, okay, in this room. But again, it's, certainly after class, that's a good time. A little bit later, you know, when you have homework problems, you come back at 12:15, because I teach a class in between, to come in there and we can sit in front of a machine and do it together. But if you have a problem before then, you know, don't hesitate to contact me at any time, especially IM or email. Okay, there are two textbooks for this class, and there's a textbook, okay, which is expensive, and you may not even need this. Okay, many students find that they don't need the textbook. The textbook is good only if you need another perspective. I won't give you assignments from this book. I won't even give you reading. I don't follow it exactly, although it does cover all the material. So you might want to hold off on this book. Until, if you think after my lectures that you need something more, then go out and buy it. Much more important is the workbook. not only because I'm the author who wrote it, it has nothing, even though it's the same color, it has nothing to do with each other. This is not the workbook for this textbook. Okay, we just happened to both publish it the same semester. They're also authors here in the college. And the publisher decided that it would look nice in a package. Okay, so they don't belong together. They have nothing to do with each other. But this has hundreds of exercises with answers in the back, as well as sample exams. And all my exams, either old questions ended up in the workbook, or questions from the workbook will end up on the exam. So the best way to study for the exams will be to go through the exercises in the book. And I do follow the order of the workbook, so this is keyed more to the lecture than the textbook is. So if you're going to buy something, this is what you should buy. Hold off on this until you decide. I'm not trying to distract you from buying a book. It's an excellent book, but I don't follow this order exactly, and you may or may not need it depending on how good you take notes and things of that type. You're welcome to look at both books after class. Okay, there are two exams, so I don't really call them a midterm, and the first is roughly a third of the way in, and the second one is roughly two-thirds of the way into the semester. There's a departmental final, which all the students take, and CAS 1.5 takes the same final, which is made up by everybody together. And you will have programs between 6 to 8 assignments that you do on your own at home, either on your own computers or on the computer center computers, and there are computers. How many people have computers at home? Everybody. Which you'll probably find it much more comfortable to work at home than to work here, so I won't tell you all the computers are here, but they're all over the place, and you're certainly welcome to sit at any machine that, you know, and use them here, but you'll find it much easier to work at home. All the software that you need is free, and I'll tell you in a moment how to get it and how to install it, and everything will work fine. Like in the real world, when you have a job to do, there are penalties if you are late. And here as well, there's a 5-point penalty out of 100 points for every class day. Now, class day doesn't mean calendar day. So, in other words, if it was due on Thursday and you handed it on Monday, that's only 5 points off. You don't get charged for holidays or weekends. It's only for class days. I shouldn't have to say this, but I'll say it anyway. You're supposed to work on your own. Okay, there is nothing wrong, and you're encouraged to talk to each other about how you did your assignment and what techniques you might have used and what approaches you take. But then you sit up, you go home and you sit and do it on your own. You don't sit and take someone else's assignment and make little itty-bitty changes on it to try to fool me into saying that it's different, because I've got a lot of experience. Okay, so you don't want to do that. And besides, you won't learn anything anyway, and students who don't do their own assignments end up failing the exams anyway, so it doesn't help you any which way. Now, let me just tell you something about this class. It's not organic chemistry. It's not even physics 1 and 2. Okay? It is not. The material in this class is not, I don't want to say brain science or brain surgery. It's not difficult. It's not that difficult. It's not calculus. Okay? What it is, and I have to tell you up front, is extremely, extremely time consuming. Okay? You're going to have to spend a lot of time doing the assignments. And it sometimes gets frustrating. It's like solving a puzzle. And you can't solve puzzles when you're under pressure. So if you put it off and wait till the day before, the night before, you'll never get it done in time. When I give an assignment, you should start immediately. We say sort of 12 hours a week you should budget for doing assignments. Okay? I'm not lying. It takes a lot of time. Some people have this knack, the light bulb goes off, and they can solve puzzles. You know, some people just look at a puzzle and they put it all together. And other people have to sweat over it. You'll eventually get it, but you need to put in a lot of effort. And it's like any other skill, like riding a bike. Some people get on the bike and ride right away, and some people have to just do it over and over and over and fall and make errors until they get it right. Plan the time. If you don't have a time, if you have a busy life, social or school life, don't fool yourself. Okay, you're not gonna. You need to put in that time. Okay. And here is my little in writing warning. Okay, tremendous amount of work involved. You should be prepared to spend a lot. And there's an additional time spent in class, and it's time spending. If you don't have the time, don't kid yourself. we're going to see when we start talking about writing programs. The computer, unfortunately, doesn't read our minds. It doesn't even understand us when we speak to it directly. It's not like on Star Trek, where Captain Kirk says, computer, and out comes the result. Okay? One day, maybe we'll get there. Okay? We're beginning to have voice recognition, certainly, but it really doesn't work the way we want. You can't still tell a computer, prepare me chicken soup, and have it pop out chicken soup the next day. Or even tell the computer, prepare my taxes, and here's the information, and I'll come back. Okay? We need to speak to the computer in a particular language that the computer understands. We call those programming languages. And I'll talk more about programming languages a little bit later on. And programming languages, in particular the one we're going to learn, is called C++. And I'll talk a little bit more about why we chose that language as the language in a moment. Are in between normal English-type statements and mathematical or computer-type statements. And in fact, the computer does not even understand what we write when we write something in C++. We need to translate it from C++, okay, from what we call our program, into a form that the computer really understands and the computer can follow. Again, I'm going to talk all about this a little bit later on, but the translator that translates a program is called a compiler. Okay? So the steps, in a very broad overview, is you will think about how to solve a problem, figure out a method, okay, a sort of a plan of attack. Then you'll express the solution in C++, and then we will need to translate it. And once it's translated, the computer then will follow our instructions, hopefully give us the right answers. More often than not, we'll have made a mistake, so we'll have to go back and change our programs, translate them again, round and round and round, until eventually it gets the right answer, you print it out, you hand it in to me, and you're very happy. Okay? So the process by which we translate from C++ into the language that the computer understands is called a compiler. In addition, we need an environment in which to work. Just like when you write a term paper, you work within Microsoft Office. Okay? You have tools for printing, tools for saving, tools for making changes, for copying from place to place, tools for checking your spelling, and so on and so forth. And today we're a very visual world. Okay? It doesn't say on bathrooms words like men's room and ladies' room. There's a little picture which you got to look at. On a car, there's no word that says gasoline, but there's a little picture. We call icons. Okay? And Microsoft Windows, in fact, most systems today are very visual. We call them a graphical user interface. Okay? The environment in which we're going to work on the computer is a special environment that's been prepared for typing in our programs, our C++ programs, translating them, finding the mistakes, saving our work, printing out the results. And we call that an IDE, an integrated development environment. Integrated development environment is simply a tool that you'll find very helpful in bringing all the different things that you need to do to get your programs running in one place. An IDE is not a compiler. A compiler may be part of an IDE, because in addition to translating, you have to save your work, you have to make changes. The IDE is the entire environment in which you work. One of the tools within it, excuse me, is the compiler that actually does the translation. There are many, many IDEs on the market. Many of them are free, some of them are expensive, some of them are very sophisticated, some of them are more simpler to use. There are many many environments that are available to you. Please, everyone, make sure that the attendance sheet gets eventually signed by everybody. This is the one we're going to use. Okay, this is an older one, not suitable for our purposes. Some of the 1.5 classes use this one, which is also an older one. We're going to use an environment called CodeBlocks. It's free. One can download it off the web. It's being actually developed. In other words, people are adding features to this every day. We've packaged it for you at this particular site. So if you look on your, so you don't have to copy it down, on your handout, okay, I give you the site from which you can go to, download the two different components that you'll find there. There are instructions on that page. Install it on your machine, and then you'll be able to do exactly what I'm doing here in class. It's also installed on the Brooklyn College computers. They have both of these systems installed. For this class, we're going to be using this environment. Now, I have no way of knowing, nor do I care if you use any other environment, because all I care about is the results, but this is the one that you're going to see day in, day out here on class that I'm going to use. You become very familiar with it. It's a very powerful tool, and even though we're first starting, some of you may go on to take other computer classes. Hopefully I will, by the end of the semester, seduce many of you into becoming computer majors, and you'll love it, and you'll see that you can use it in science and engineering and all kinds of other wonderful things. You go on to take other classes, and this is a free program. So one of the first tasks you have between now and Thursday is to get that running on your machine at home. Okay, and that's what I'd like everyone to do, is between now and Thursday, get the system up and running. So that if on Thursday you can get it up and running, at least you come here and I'm trying to give you hands on how to get it up and running. If you have a laptop, bring it in, and we'll try to do the installation here if you have a problem. Excuse me, I have a very bad cold this week. And once we get this thing running on your machine at home, then we can start concentrating on thinking, on learning how to write our own programs. I don't want you to spend half the semester not being able to do anything because you can't get this thing running and you still, you know, the car doesn't work. You want to learn how to drive, you have to have a working car. You don't want to spend half the driving ed class fixing the car. Get the class car working the first day and then spend the rest of the time learning how to drive. So that really will be the first task you have to get this installed on your computers at home. Go to this site. There are detailed instructions. There's also a big manual that you can download, okay, which I wrote together with Professor Goetz, and you can read that manual. You won't really need it. It's got a, what describes the code block system in a lot more detail, but it's nice to know that you have a manual. You can download it, keep it on your system, and look things up when you need to. Okay. Now, your assignments that you're going to get, 6 to 8 assignments, usually I give you 2 weeks to do them. You'll hand them in on printouts, okay? But you also need to save them electronically. So you should get some backup, maybe get a USB key, okay? They're so cheap these days. Save your work so that if I ask you at any time that I want to see them electronically, you'll have to have them available. But I'll need to have printouts. The other advantage of having them on a USB key is that if you have a problem, bring it in. Don't describe to me your problem, because sometimes you're looking right at it and you see something very different than I see. Bring it in, we'll run it on the machine, look at your program, and get it to run. Okay? Okay. Now remember to change the office hours that are printed on the syllabus. Instead of Tuesdays, they are on Thursday, Mondays and Thursdays, 12:15 to 2. On the rest of the syllabus, there's a required statement on academic integrity. There are some rules about golden rules of email a professional email correspondence. Obviously, there's a difference in when you write email to your lover or boyfriend or girlfriend, or then when you write to a business associate or to a professor. A lot of people don't know the difference. Starting an email, "Hey professor," is not very, you know, your boss is not going to like you when you say, "Hey professor." That might be a way to say something to your friend. So, a little more formal writing. I mean, I'm a very friendly guy. Not all faculty members are. It's a good idea to start learning how to write email in a somewhat more formal method. Okay. The last sheet we'll get to in a moment. Are there any questions? Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about the C language. First of all, what is a computer language? Well, as I said before, languages that human beings speak are called natural languages. such as English, French, Spanish, and so on. The problem with natural languages is that they are ambiguous. That is, a sentence can mean more than one thing. If I say to you, I saw the woman in the park with a telescope, what does that mean? Does it mean I saw a woman using a telescope? Or does it mean I saw, using a telescope, I saw the woman? The sentence means both. It's ambiguous. You can't tell from which one it means. Now, human beings, if I tell you a story, it was a solar eclipse, and everybody was in Central Park watching the eclipse with their telescopes. And I said, you know, I saw the woman in the park with a telescope. You would draw the conclusion that the woman was using a telescope to look at the sun, and I watched her doing it. On the other hand, I told you a story about me being arrested as a peeping Tom. Then you would gather the conclusion that I was using the telescope to look at the woman. Okay? How is it that human beings make that connection? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. It's a very interesting, how do we get meaning out of sentences? We know all about grammar. Okay? We can trace the grammar of English sentences and Spanish and French. We can have rules of grammar. You can diagram sentences. No problem. Incidentally, the word grammar in computer science is called syntax. And we'll be focusing a lot about proper grammar because computer languages are very unforgiving. Unlike English, where you can put print commas in lots of places and the sentence still makes perfectly good sense, if you put a wrong comma in the wrong place, it won't be accepted. So syntax will be very important to us. But syntax is relatively easy. You learn rules. Periods go here, question marks go there, end of story. Meaning is called semantics. And how it is that people understand meaning from sentences is the study of linguistics. It's a very important field of study. There's a lot of research going on. Because obviously, one day we would like to have those type of computers that we can just say, do my taxes, get me a date, and let me know when it's all done. Okay? We can't do that now. Programming languages are non-ambiguous. They're, in a sense, English-like, since they use sort of English words, and they use English punctuation marks. But you have very rigid structure with which to work. And any sentence you make can mean only one thing. As I said, the computer doesn't understand programming languages directly. We then translate this into something called machine language, which we really will not study in this class. And we translate it using a compiler. We write it in programming languages because writing in a machine language is very awkward for human beings, just a bunch of numbers. And writing in programming language is the best, closest we can get right now to being able to communicate with the computer in a natural type language. Okay, there are many, many different programming languages. Some of them are just historical. They just developed over time. Some of them are special purposes languages. Some people have just different styles of thinking. For whatever reason, there are a lot of normal, natural languages. There are hundreds of programming languages. Today, two of the probably the most popular languages in the development world is a language called C++ and a language called Java. And about half the schools in the United States start teaching Java, the other half the schools start teaching C++. It really makes no difference because probably by the time you go out and get a job, there'll be a new flavor of the month language, and you'll have to learn that language again. What we do here is not focus on a particular language. The language is just a tool by which you learn how to write programs, how to think, how to organize your thoughts, how to express yourself. And whether you use C++ or Java or any one of many other languages, okay, the result is getting the computer to follow our instructions. Again, I'm going to ask everybody, not today, but sort of come more to the front so that it's a huge room and I don't have to yell. In any event, so why C++? Well, historically, there was an older language called C and then C developed into C++. In a sense, it's really a subset. If this represents C++, okay, that is C and C++. Everything you can do in C, you can do in C++, but there are certain things in C++ that you can't do in C. We'll be doing C++. It's the main language in this department. You'll take at least 3 classes using C++, the next 3 in the series. They do teach you other languages later on for comparison, to get experience writing in other languages, but this is going to be the language of the department, and it's important to get it right now. So why did we choose C++? What are some of its advantages? And like anything else, its disadvantages. First of all, it's a standardized language. That means if you learn C++ here, you're going to use C++ anywhere. Okay, it's not like there are different dialects of English. And if you go to one part of the country, people can barely understand you. Okay? Or if you go to Britain, you know, there's British English and American English, you know, 2 different languages. Okay, there's one version of C++. It's standardized. There's actually an organization called ANSI, American National Standards Institute, which is standardizes all kinds of things. They standardize screw sizes and they standardize film types and all of everything. And one of the things that they standardize is the language C. So when you learn C++, there's only one version to learn. C++ is ubiquitous. It's a very, very common language. It's freely available. You don't have to pay money to buy a compiler to use it. There are multiple compilers that you can download, use them, install them on your machines, don't have to pay anybody any royalty, and you go on the internet, just do a search for C++, and you'll find millions and millions and millions of pages devoted to that language. C, unlike C++, is what we call a low-level language. What is a low-level language? Well, in a sense, I could think of it as the difference between the way a 3-year-old speaks and the way, hopefully, a college student speaks. Okay? The 3-year-old can still express themselves, but in a much simpler format. And therefore, if you want to express more complicated concepts with the vocabulary of a 3-year-old, it's a lot harder to do so. You can do it, but it's a lot harder to do so. On the other hand, the vocabulary of a college student has larger, big words, which have deep meanings, powerful speech, and you can express complicated thoughts using that vocabulary. C is a low-level language, which means its vocabulary is not very, very large. In addition, it's much closer to the machine language that the computer truly understands than it is to the natural language which human beings speak. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, there are many people who just like to get into their cars and drive them away, or listen to their stereos. But then there are other people who like to get their hands dirty in the engine and get down deep and dirty or play around with this. They're not happy with just the stereo or the home theater system. They're always constantly making changes and getting down to it. Well, for getting down and dirty with the computer, okay, you would want to be able to speak its language, okay, even as awkward as it might be. And so there's advantages for being low-level languages. And in addition, it's a small language. You can learn C very, very quickly. Indeed, in our first semester in C++, we'll have sort of picked up all of C. Without any more. We won't learn all of C++. That's a large language. You'll need several semesters before you learn all of its capabilities. But just in the first semester, sort of in passing, you'll have picked up all of C. And it's a permissive language. Permissiveness is a good and bad thing. If you're a teenager, you want permissive parents, right? You want to do whatever you want to do. When you turn into a parent, believe me, you'll start having a different attitude all of a sudden. Then you'll say, one minute, I don't want to be so permissive. I want my kids, you know, to follow certain rules. Permissiveness is good because you can get to explore the world. You can do things. No one tells you what to do. But you can also get into trouble. The same thing is true with computer languages. A permissive language gives you all the power to do whatever you want with the computer. But you can also make big mistakes. In fact, it's possible to write a C statement that actually blows up the screen. That actually can make smoke come out of the back of a monitor. It's a very permissive language. It lets you violate all kinds of rules, which you may not even know that you're violating. We don't want to do that. We as students want to have at least certain rules. Let the computer tell us, no, you better not do that. You can't do that. That's not a good thing to do. That's a non-permissive language. C++ is non-permissive. Okay, it's much stricter. It holds you accountable. So one can argue back and forth which you want to use. If you're a real hacker-type programmer, you know, then you want to be a teenager. You want to do whatever you want. Then you would, you know, want to program directly in C, get down and fiddle around with things in the heck of a factory. You blow up the computer, you get your parents to buy you another one. Okay? On the other hand, if you're a business writing programs for some scientific mission, you want to make sure that the satellite doesn't blow up as it passes the moon after they spend billions of dollars doing it. You need a language that holds your hand and says, listen, you got to do things within certain rules. C++ is less permissive, C is permissive. Okay. Strengths of C++? It is efficient. What do we mean by an efficient language? We mean that it is efficient for you to write programs, makes good use of your time. Well, it probably won't sound like that the first semester as you're struggling with the language, but once you get a handle on it, you'll be able to write very powerful programs very efficiently. It's also efficient in the sense that when you write a program in C++, it will make good use of the computer's resources. Portability. A program written in C++ for one machine will generally work on another machine, or will need very few changes. It's a very powerful language, very expressive. It's very flexible. You'll be able to use C++ to write all kinds of programs, whether you're a business person or a science person, or write games, gaming, mathematicians, all can write programs in C++. And one of its most powerful tools, is one that you won't appreciate right away, is that there's what's called a standard library. We never want to have to develop anything that someone else has already done. Okay, you don't want to reinvent the wheel, is the expression. If someone's already invented a wheel, why would you have to find another way of doing it? Okay? In the same way, there is a huge library of tools that have been developed by other people that are available to you to use. For example, a very simple example. When I went to school, before there were calculators, believe it or not, there was such a time, okay, to take a square root, there was a method that we learned in high school. A long method, which I'm sure they don't teach anymore. Because today, all they do is they hand everybody calculators and say, square root, you press the button. Okay? You don't understand what half these things mean because you're pressing buttons. Nevertheless, there's a long method by which you actually, obviously the calculator has to know the method on how to calculate a square root. If we want to write a program to take a square root of a number, we don't want to have to tell the computer how to go about finding a square root. Luckily, someone has already written a mathematics library, a library of tools, what we call functions, which we can then use to take square roots, to take sines and cosines and tangents and anything else that we want. So therefore, by having this very powerful standard library, and standard is important because the same tools used no matter where you work. So if you have a standard library, you can take advantage of all these tools and C++ make a lot of use of these libraries. It's based on the fact that if there isn't a library, someone will write a library for you. You pay someone to write. You're a game programmer. You don't want to have to write all the details about how to tell whether the bomb hits the monster or not, and how do you know where you are. There are tools that people have already written, game writing tools, and you just want to concentrate on being creative and writing the programs and so on and so forth. So using libraries is very powerful. Now, as I'm sure a lot of you know, when you use a computer, there are two parts. There's the hardware, the physical components of the machine, and then there's the software. The software is intangible. It's the programs, the instructions. You can't put your finger on it, so to speak, okay, because it's sort of in the electronics, okay? Now, when we talk about software, we sort of divide the world into two parts. There's what we call the operating system. Windows is an example of an operating system. It sort of runs in the background. It provides the user interface. And then there's the specific applications, the game, the spreadsheet, the word processor, you know, whatever the thing that you're doing. There are several different operating systems out there. While Bill Gates would like everybody to use Microsoft, and probably about 90% of the world does use Microsoft, there are other operating systems which don't cost any money and are arguably more powerful than Windows, although not as friendly. And one of those very popular operating systems called Unix, or its free version called Linux. And in many areas of the world, especially labs, they use Linux as an operating system rather than Windows. It's a little less friendly for the uninitiated, but very, very powerful, and allows you to configure it very, very well. You can play around with Unix. And C++ works very well with Unix. Now, that's not nothing we're going to take advantage of in this class. In your next class, you'll already be able to talk about how you can communicate with the operating system and talk to it, but that happens to be one of its strengths. Weaknesses. Everything has weaknesses in life. There's nothing that's good, perfect. First of all, when you write programs, C programs, they can be error-prone. You're going to find this out right away the first day. A small little slip. Small little... Remember, the computer can't read your mind. Okay? Typing one wrong character can make all the difference between a computer following the instructions, being successful or not. C++ programs can be difficult to understand to the uninitiated. We're going to spend a lot of time learning how to write things in proper style. Not only do we want things to work, but we want them to be works of art. We want our programs to be easy to read. And so we want to avoid the fact that C++ programs can be difficult to understand. And finally, if you don't follow proper style, and you make your programs difficult to understand, then later on they're difficult to modify. And that becomes very important because you don't want to have to start writing everything from scratch all over again. If I give you part A of an assignment, and then a week later I say, now here's part B, take what you did in part A, make some changes. If you did part A right, with the correct style, making the changes to part B should be very easy to do. On the other hand, if you did not use proper style and write part A, you might have to do part B from scratch. Okay? In the real world, where programs have thousands or millions of lines of code being worked upon by multiple people in a team, clearly you want to be able to write programs that are easy to understand, and one of the team can understand everyone else's twisted logic, and easy to modify. Okay? And we have to make an effort to do that. So I'm going to insist a lot on style. You, at the end of the semester, you'll be questioning, why am I taking off points? Because you're not lining things up. Like an English class, identify space at the beginning of every paragraph. Big deal, you yell at the teacher. Who cares? It's still the same thing. Right? The English teacher said, I don't care, take off points anyway. Same thing here too. I'm going to insist on certain styles of writing because it's good training for later on when you get a job or you're going to be working somewhere. One of the things you can do is bring in programs that you've written, and they look at it because they want you to know, are you a team player? Are you going to write programs that will be able to, other people will be able to work with together, or are you a loner that has to work on their own and nobody else can understand their code? Okay. Now, the very first homework assignment is homework zero. By that I mean that I don't give you credit for it, I just check whether you've done it or not. And in fact, I've written it for you. You have it on your sheet on the very last sheet, homework zero. Now, this is going to be due a week from today. Usually I'll give you 2 weeks, but there's really no thinking process here. Because what I'm going to ask you to do is I'm going to ask you, remember that by Thursday, hopefully you'll have the system running. And once you have the system running, how will you know that you have it successfully running? If you type in exactly what's in this box, as we're going to do in a moment, okay, I'm not asking you to create your own programs. You don't even have to understand what you're doing. I want you to be like a monkey, typing it exactly as it's in this box. Okay? And it runs, and you better hand it in to me, then I know that by at least by next Monday, we can start working on our own and start thinking about programs. So the assignment and the design of this is for you to be able to assure yourself that you know the processes for doing so. And because of that, I'm going to do it here in class from scratch with you, so that you can just follow along. And again, there are a lot of things that you're not going to understand, which is fine. That's why we have the rest of the semester. So I'm going to point you now to how to start up with CoBlocks, go through the steps. You're going to follow the same steps at home on your machine, doing exactly the same thing, getting results. So we start, when you install CodeBlocks properly, you'll eventually have a little icon like this called CodeBlocks, or it will be maybe over here, or it will be, depending on your system, over here. Yes. It comes. There'll be two things to download to your machine. You run them, and it'll do everything for you. Go to that site, and we've worked it out so that it's quite simple for students to do the two steps. Make sure there are two steps. A lot of people forget they only do one, and then wonder why the other one doesn't work. There are two things you have to do. Okay. There's even a version there for those who use Macintosh. Is anyone using an Apple or Macintosh? No, so then you don't have to worry about that. Okay. So you start up CodeBlocks. Remember, CodeBlocks is an integrated development environment. It's going to open up a window. I have a reasonably slow system here. It comes up looking like this. It has the tip of the day, which you can read and totally forget about. I just close it out of the way. And it's got various... It looks like a Windows program. File, edit, view. There are icons here. Clearly this means start a new file, save, okay, get an old one. And there are some icons that eventually we'll get, so don't worry about them right now. You don't have to get involved with the whole system here. And there's some stuff over here, and some stuff over here, and then there's some stuff down here. You actually have 1, 2, 3, 4 different windows here. Each of these windows you can adjust their relative distances. The down stuff down here is just messages that it tells you whether it's been successful, not successful, so on and so forth. We can ignore that for now. We can ignore this area here right now. We can ignore this area here right now. Focus right now on projects. If you don't see projects and you see symbols, just keep on clicking until you find the word that says projects. Okay. Your environment is called a workspace. Okay? And different people have like to configure their workspace differently, right? You have different people have offices, they have a desk, the desk is their workspace. Some people like pictures, some people like flowers. Okay? When you're very sophisticated, you can configure your workspace so that each time it starts up the way you like it. Right now, this is the way we like it. Out of the box, no big changes. So you see that workspace is sort of on the top there. Every assignment that you do is called a project. So what I call it homework 0, homework 1, homework 2, the term in the integrated development environment is a project. There might be a project to write a program to calculate the trajectory of a missile being fired from Earth towards the moon. Okay, that's a project. A project may have multiple components. Okay? I mean, there's the engineering portion, and there's the fuel gauge portion, and there's a lot of different parts that have to work together. Individual components are called files. So a workspace is overarching the way you set up your system. Each homework assignment you will set up will be a different project. And it will create on the disk for you a directory with that name, the name of that project. Each project is in its own directory. The system will do that automatically for you. Within each project, there may be, or there will be, multiple files. Okay? We will start out with a very, very simple project, Homework 0, which has only one file to it. Most of the assignments that we do in this class for the semester will be single file type projects, which near the end of the semester, however, we'll start getting into multiple file, more complicated projects. So again, from your perspective, an assignment is a project. Each project contains a file, which is the programs that you're going to be writing. Okay. Now, we want to start a new project, which we're going to call Homework 0. So the easiest way to do it is to go to File, New Project. That's the first thing you do when you start. File, New Project. Of course, if you're working on an old project, You're not going to start a new project. You're just going to be bringing it up. But when we start from scratch, file new project. Okay? And since we are very lazy, that's a general rule in programming, why do any work if someone has already been able to do it for us? People have created what they call templates for certain types of different projects that people write. Okay, there are many, many different types of projects depending on what you want to accomplish. For this class, every single project will be what we call a console application. That's the simplest type of project of all, and that's the type of projects we'll be doing in this class. They're called console applications. You'll see in a minute why they're called console applications. Now, by choosing one of these pictures, what we're really doing is we're calling upon a wizard. Okay? If you're familiar with Microsoft Word, you know there are wizards for writing, for doing envelopes, or wizards for helping you write term papers, or wizards for helping you write your resume. So sit on your shoulder and lead you through it step by step. There are many different wizards here. We're choosing the console application wizard, and we say go. Then they have this empty thing here that says, skip this page next time, just go next. There's nothing here. Important choice. Here's the first decision you have to make. Are you writing a program in C or in C++? Here's a different set of rules. We must always make sure that our programs will be C++. So we're choosing C++. Now we have to give our project a title. This is going to be the name of the folder into which it's going to place all the components of this project. A good name might be Homework Zero, or anything else you want to call it. Give it a name. Assignment number one, or Space Project number three, or whatever you want to call it. Now it wants to know where you want to keep your, where do you want to store it on the disk. Now, when you save your term papers, where do you save them? In Windows, most people save them something in the My Documents folder, right? And if you're really an organized person, you make your My Documents folder, you make subfolders in there, you say personal folders, class, and then class, make another folder, and so on and so forth. This is your opportunity to tell the computer where on the disk to do it. So I will browse, and I have created within my document something called my C++ programs. You might call it my silly homework assignments, or I hate this, or whatever you want to call this. Create a directory. And so there's a folder, my C++ program. Say OK. And then it will create, you'll see in a moment, a new folder called homework zero within my C++. Now I just want to make sure that I don't have one there already, because that would sort of mess things up. So let me look at my C++ programs. And sure enough, I do have one there already from last time. So I'm going to delete it. So it's not there anymore. From last semester, close this down again. Okay. Now, because you chose to call your assignment homework zero, and you've told it where to put it, it now says that it's going to create a file called homework0.cpp code blocks project, which will contain all the information about this project. All the little bits and pieces of what it has to know are stored here. Okay, so all I've really done here is chosen a title, give it a name that makes sense, told it where to put it, and everything else I'm just going to go next. Wizard is leading us through. Now, there are actually two versions of every program that we can write. The one that we write while we're still getting it right, with training wheels on it, okay, with information that helps us find our mistakes, that's called the debug version. When you find an error in a program, it's called to debug it. An error is called a bug in a program. Does anyone know why an error is called a bug in a program? A long, long time ago, meaning in the 1940s, computers were not little electronic devices like this. They were huge machines. And they actually had moving parts in them. switches that opened and closed, like light switches, that clicked on and off, mechanical parts. One day, the computer stopped working. So the young lady, whose name was Grace Hopper, who was in charge, decided to fix the computer. And in those days, computers were huge. When you wanted to fix the computer, you walked into the computer. It's like you opened the door, you walked in, then looked at different parts. And she found that a moth had flown into the computer and got caught in one of the switches. And the switch couldn't close. So she debugged the computer, and the computer started working again. And from that point on, every error is called a bug. And it's not a joke, this is true, because she took that moth, and she took her lab notebook, she took a piece of scotch tape, and scotch taped the moth into the lab notebook, and drew a little circle, first computer bug. And it's in the Smithsonian now in Washington, D.C. You can actually go see this first computer bug. In any event, errors of computers are called bugs, and so we can ask the computer to create what we call a debug configuration. That is, to create a system that helps us find errors. But eventually, when you get it running, you want to distribute it to other people, which we don't do here, but you would really commercial. You want a lean, mean version. A version that just works, we don't need all the extra training wheels on it. Okay? That's called the release configuration. You can choose here which to do, but we will just make sure that both of them are checked. As they are. That way we don't have to worry about it later on, so I'll just make sure they're both checked. In the manual, by the way, the steps that I'm going through are there as well. Now we say finish. Finally, the wizard is done. Say finish, and look what happened. Under workspace, there's now something called homework zero. That was the name of our project. And under that is something called sources. What is the word source? In computer language, the program that you write is called the source. Okay? So whatever you're going to write, that's the source of all good things. And if I click on this little source, I see that the computer's created for me a file called main.code C++. Main C++. That is where we're going to type our instructions. Okay? And in fact, when I click on it, it already has created the basic bare outlines of a C++ program. In fact, that is the simplest C++ program you can write. It's all done already. All this program does... Well, let me see. How can I figure out what this program does? What you see here is C++. Forget about understanding it right now. And the color coding will become very useful to us at 1 o'clock at night when our eyes become bleary. It'll help us find different things. Forget about what that means. I'll spend the whole semester teaching you what this means. Forget about it. But that is a full C++ program. It's the simplest program that one can write in C++. Obviously, we're going to change it to reflect what I've asked you to type in. Once you write a program, you've got to tell the computer to translate it into a language that the computer can understand. That's called compilation. We say we compile the program. Now, compilation, which is not a simple task, really has two parts, which I will describe what they are, what they do later on. But compilation really is, first you compile, and then you do something called you link. And those two steps together is called to build the program. In this class, we're not interested in compiling and linking as separate steps. We simply want to have it do that. Once you've built your program, there's now a version of the program written in machine language that's automatically going to be stored on your machine. It's sitting there. Well, you want to now tell the computer, do it. That's called execute. So there are two really steps. There's you write the program. Okay. Then you have to build it. And then you have to execute it. Now, if I press this button here, that will build the program. That will take this program, compile it, link it, whatever that means, and create this on the machine. And then I can then press this button, which is to run or execute. We now tell the computer, follow the machine language, do it. Or I can be totally lazy and press this button, which says build it, which means compile, link, and run it, all in one shot. Okay? So you've got the two steps or the combined step. Which you use is totally up to you. I'm going to do it in separate steps just to highlight the fact that things are happening. So then, let me press this button, build. Focus now on the area down here. Compiles, it links, and it said to me, thank goodness, no errors, no warnings. I'd be very embarrassed if there'd be any errors or warnings in the simplest of all programs. 9 times out of 10 when you write your programs, there are going to be lots and lots of errors. And then you're going to go back and fix them. Compile again. More errors. Fix them. Scream. Pull your hair out. Eventually, we'll say 0 errors, 0 warning. What have I done? I've taken this. I've compiled and linked it. You saw that. And on the machine, forget about where right now, there's a version of this program written in a form for the machine to understand that you can't understand anymore. Now when I run it, that's the next step. So if you look down here, it says executing, which is what means running, and it does it. This is called the console. That's why this is called a console program. So the program did what we told it to do. What did we tell it to do? Print the message, hello world. That's it. Nothing else. And it sits there, waits for you. It took you 0.14 of a second to do it. It's waiting for you to press any key to continue. When you do that, it's finished. Done. That's the simplest program of all. Now, all I want you to do is to take this and retype it to what's on your sheet. Even if you don't understand a word about it. But let me explain a little bit about this right now. Again, we're going to go through this later on a lot. First of all, you see a line here with a number sign in front of it. Actually, number sign include. I think you see those on your handouts as well. That is an instruction to the computer to go somewhere on the disk, find something called the IO stream, whatever that is, and copy it in here, in the place, so you don't have to type hundreds of statements at this point. Basically, that's the instructions that teach a computer how to print to the screen, which it did, which it needed to know how to do, and how to, if we later on have to type things in, to read information in. Okay? Every program we ever write will have one of these lines in it. You'll see that throughout the whole semester. Then there's going to be always, every semester, the whole semester, a statement called using namespace standard. That basically tells the computer, I'm going to be using certain standard assumptions. Don't bother me about them. Okay? Assume I know what I'm talking about. When you get more sophisticated, you'll learn how to override some of those standard assumptions. But every program we do this semester will have that line in there. Do you have that line somewhere in your program that I'm asking you to type in? You see it? Every program will have that line in it. Throughout the whole semester. This is the part of the program that actually does the work. Notice it's called main, which, by the way, notice it has the same name as this, main. This is called a function. In other words, in the real world, when you have a complicated job to do, a good executive breaks up the job into individual tasks. Delegate. Right? The cleaning crew, the accounting crew, and so on and so forth. The executive simply calls upon others to do. I need the accounting crew to do work now. When they go home, then I call upon the cleaning crew to work. That's the way it works. A task is, we call a function. So a program consists of multiple functions, multiple tasks. A program is the basic unit. So let's start again from the top. We have workspace. But we're not going to involve ourselves with our workspace because we're not changing that. The basic unit is called a project. Homework zero is a project. Homework one will be another project. A project consists of multiple programs or files. In this case, there's only one of them called main. That's this main. This will may contain multiple functions, subtasks to be done. Right now we only have one task, also called main. Very simple program, because its only job is to do what? To print the message, hello world. And that's what this statement does, without details. And after it does it, we say, return, back, finish, say you're finished. Which is what the zero means. It means, I'm finished. And that's it, end. So our project, homework zero, contains a program called main.cpp, which in this case contains a single function called main. We'll later on have multiple functions there, or we may even have multiple files here. But for now, one project, one program, one function, its only job is to print out hello world. Okay? So, we write the program, we then can build it, it'll tell me nothing to be done, because it already did it, we didn't make any changes, what's the point of translating it again? If I make a little change, it'll have to compile it again, but since I made no changes, whatever, okay, and then I can run it, and after I run it, I can run it again, and again, until I get tired of looking at it, and then I can save my work, and I can finish. And let's do homework zero together. Okay? Let's do homework zero together. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to exit, file, quit. Blah, I don't care. Whatever. I'm going to go back into my here, into my C++ programs. I'm going to get rid of the whole... By the way, let's look at what happened in homework zero. Lots of stuff has been created for us. This is the thing that we typed. Okay? But then there's all kinds of other stuff which will become explanatory later on, which I don't want to worry about right now. Right now, I'm simply going to delete this whole thing. Delete. Goodbye. It's gone. Let's start from scratch. So, to review, I'm going to start up CodeBlocks. I'm going to close or ignore the little tips, which could be useful. And I'm going to create a new project, which I told you to go to File, New Project. Of course, to make it easy for you, they've already put that button right there. Okay? This is you to open up an existing project. This is where you'd create a new project. And all the projects that you've been working on recently are listed over here. So you can go File, New Project, or simply Create New Project. Next step, choose the type of project. Make sure you choose Console Application. Say Go, skip this page, C++, give it a name. What I called last time, Homework Zero, I'm going to give it a different name. My First Homework. Okay? Style of capitalization. We generally don't use blanks in words. We generally use uppercase and lowercase letters and use, as you can see, when I want to write three words, I write M capital, then F capital, and so on. And I'll talk more about style as time goes on. Right now, let's just get it done without it really understanding. I can go back to show you that it remembered from the last time where I put it, so you don't have to always go change it. And then just go next. Make sure these are both checked. Finish. Let's see what happens now. My workspace. My first homework. Sources.
name.
It always will be a name. And there it is, that simple, basic program. Which I am now going to completely destroy. Of course, you probably wouldn't want to do that. You want to avoid having to type things from scratch, so you can actually, you know, keep whatever it's done, do them. But I want to start from scratch. And I want to take the homework assignment and start typing things in. Now, the first thing I'm going to type here is slash star. Okay? And then I'm going to tab. When you have to space in, always tab. Don't use spaces. You'll see later on why this is an important thing to do. Okay? And I'm going to type name. And this name was called, well, I call it Homework Zero. Here I called it My First Homework. So I guess I should be consistent. You use Homework Zero. Now when I hit enter, look what happens. It remembers that I tabbed. And it's very useful for that because it'll help us line things up perfectly. So, name one. Now, the next thing is author. And the author is going to be your name. So I'm going to write Professor Langus. Put your name in. And then the date. I'm going to put January 2008. You don't need to put the time in there unless you want to. And then description. This is my first program and is to be handed in. Okay? And then I'm going to backspace, one backspace, and put in star slash. Now, what did I just type in? Do you think the computer understands any of this? No. This is called a comment. Anything between a slash star and a star slash, okay, and you'll even see the color, it's sort of graded out, okay, is a comment that you're writing to yourself, or in this case, to me. We write explanations. You can write a whole story of your life in there. Now, we have certain standard style. We'd like to have name, author, date, description, which usually be a paragraph, not one line. Okay? But this is so that later on when you get this program to run and you bring it home and your mother puts it up on the refrigerator door to show everyone how proud she is of you, then everyone can read this and say, oh, now I know what this program does and who wrote it. That's what I'm looking for. Okay? The computer ignores what I've just written completely, totally. In fact, if I left out that last star slash and I kept on typing, nothing would happen because the computer would keep on ignoring everything I would type. Okay? We'll learn that comments are very important to use. I'm taking lots of points, you don't use comments. And every program that you ever write the whole semester will start a comment in this style. This is the approved style that we're going to use. Okay? But we'll talk more about comments later on. Right now, nothing was said, everything was said here was for my purposes, not for the computer. Now, the next thing I wrote was number sign include angle bracket IO stream. And if I mistype it, you'll see it won't work. Okay? Notice it's a different color, and the integrated developer, the IDE, will color code things for us, which will make it very easy for us to catch mistakes. If things are the wrong color, or it continues. I already told you what this does, but even if you don't know, we just leave it using. Now, notice that I capitalized. Okay? You can't capitalize. When I later on will compile, it'll say, I don't know what the hell that word using means. C++ is case sensitive. In other words, the same word, you know, English people understand, we know that using capital, using lowercase, is two different words. It's the same word, meaning, as far as C++ is concerned, capitalization is important. Otherwise, it won't recognize it. So I have to go back and fix this and make it a lowercase letter. Now, knows it recognized it and changed its color to the appropriate right color that it should know.
Okay.
I'm going to skip a line just for clarity. Skipping lines again is neatness. And I'm going to start the program itself. Int, main, open, close, brace. Now, you'll notice that I've used angle brackets, I've used parentheses, and I've used squiggly brackets. You can't mix them up. Each of them has their own meaning. Later on, we'll learn what they mean. But you've got to use the one that you're supposed to at the right place, or the computer won't know what to do. Okay? And when I hit enter, it automatically tabbed. I didn't even have to hit the tab key. Because as soon as it saw that brace, it knew time to move in. For neatness, it knows style. Now you can force it to use bad style. You can go back and not indent. In which case I'll take points off. Okay? But the computer's helping you, it's telling you, indent! This is the right place to indent. Later on, you'll see that when it gives you the wrong indentation, it probably meant you left out a brace somewhere. Okay? So it'll help us as well. Anyway, I'm just going to type what it says. String first, comma last. Okay. Let me quickly tell you what this is doing. We have a function called main, which started over here. And the first thing I told the computer to do is to create two variables. What is a variable? Forget about algebra variables, but very similar. A variable is just a box somewhere in the computer's memory that I'm preparing to put things into. And I'm giving them a name. One of them I'm going to call first, and the other I'm going to call last. So I'm giving them a name. We don't use variables like X, Y, Z, because they're unfriendly and meaningless. We're going to use real names that make sense. First and last, whatever that means. First name, last name. The computer doesn't know what the word first and last means. You can call it X and Y. You can call it monkey, cat. But the human being who's reading this would like to understand what these boxes are designed for. I'm going to put your first name here and your last name here. So I give them meaningful variable names. That's an aid for me, the human being, or for you to get good points. Okay? The computer doesn't care what you call them. But I also have to tell the computer something about these two boxes that I've just asked the computer to create. I have to tell them what I'm going to planning on putting in there. A number? No. I'm going to be putting in a string of characters. Your last name. Your first name. Okay? So this is what we call a type, which we'll talk about. Don't write it down now because I don't want you to be confused. But I'm creating two variables, both first and last. Here they are. I just created them. I'm labeling them with first and last. And I'm telling the computer that I intend on putting strings of characters in them, which happen to be your names. Okay, next. I now want the computer to print a message on the screen. So I tell it to do that like this. Cout stands for, not surprisingly, console out. What you're going to see. And that arrow, those double arrows, sort of mean to say, take whatever I'm going to type now and ship it to the console. So that you'll see. What do I want it to ship to console? The message, please enter your first and last name. Notice that it's in